This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe and supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-625-0769. That's 619-625-0769. Come get some San Diego recovery and some fuck fentanyl at SD Sober Living.
Is it worth it? Can you even hear me? Starting with your spotlight on me. Not enough to feed the hungry. I'm tired and I felt it for a while now. This seems lonely.
All right, welcome to the Fuck Fentanyl Podcast. I'm Luis Romero and I am the Fuck Fentanyl guy. Today I brought my special guest, my good friend Steffi, who is one of my models. How you doing, Steffi?
I'm doing pretty good. This is my first podcast. You're out here popping podcast cherries.
I know. Yeah, yeah. My fourth one in a row.
Ooh, damn, son.
I'm a savage.
He goes hard.
Hell yeah. So, I'm pretty familiar with, you know, most of my guests' stories, but I just wanted to share yours as well, because yours is going to be a little bit more different from my other three guests I've had so far. So, let's just go from the beginning. How was life growing up?
Life was definitely different. I grew up in foster care. Mm-hmm. It was tough. I went through a lot of different trauma. I started like drinking and doing drugs when I was like 13, 14. So, kind of just maneuvered through life and like ups and downs, kind of all my own guidance and like group homes and stuff. Yeah. It's crazy because I've never actually like publicly spoken about this.
This is the first time hearing about this.
Yeah. Really. So kind of that's where I guess my backstory is. I went through like so many different group homes and then eventually AWOL'd and aged out. I was adopted by somebody when I was 17.
You would just leave these houses?
I just left and I would go out and live with people I didn't even know, but it would just work out because we would be like drinking and partying, and it would be like there was like this party house that we would stay at, and like it was crazy. Like everybody, we were all minors drinking at some old man's house. It was wild shit.
What a cool guy letting you guys do that.
Right. And then like I pretty much lived with him, and like it was fine. He wasn't creepy or skeezy. I mean, it sounds creepy and skeezy, a little questionable, a little bit. Nothing ever like happened. Like my safety was still like
he just didn't care.
He just didn't care. He was all messed up on pills and everything.
He had issues to deal with.
I don't think he realized that we were all kids. He was just so high all the time.
Oh my god.
So, that's kind of where it is. And then I guess I turned into an adult. And,
okay.
I had my son when I was 19, and I was nowhere near like being a mom, I guess I should say. And it took me a while to get my shit together because I was drinking pretty heavily. And his dad like split up and then started dating this guy who's doing a shit ton of cocaine.
Really bad. Red flags.
Red flags. And like I myself hadn't touched cocaine since I was like 16.
So you only did alcohol at this time?
At this time I was just alcohol. Yeah, alcohol, weed, or like pills and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like and pills I had more of a problem with than anything, I guess.
Oh, okay. Like what kind of pills?
Like Norcos and like opioids.
Oh, opioids. Okay,
definitely. Gotcha. I mean, I did drugs, but I did like stuff like ecstasy. I would like take pills and smoke weed and like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that probably wasn't the safest.
No. Especially nowadays, that stuff's not safe.
Yeah, no, not at all. Nothing's safe at all. I actually none of it's safe. Not even alcohol. Alcohol is not a safe substance either. It's wild.
I honestly think it's the worst. My opinion.
Alcohol is the gateway drug. They tell you that marijuana is the gateway drug.
It's the first
drug
I did. Sorry.
They're so full of shit. alcohol is the only legal drug, and it's the worst thing for you. I was talking to somebody a while back. We're ADDing. We're doing branches here. We're going to go on a tree, and we'll circle back.
No worries. I got you. No, yeah.
I was talking to somebody a couple years ago, and he let me know he works in recovery. He was also a recovering heroin addict. He had told me that when you have a hangover, that's actually your body going through alcohol withdrawals. And I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, for sure.
It's like, I thought a hangover was just because you consume too much sugar from the alcohol. No, it's actually your body being like, well, I actually need more of that to feel okay. Yeah. And that's wild to me.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I was more of a drinker. And then I guess we could fast forward. Like, I have kids. And I have kids, and I kind of, like...
So you had your first one when you were 19.
Okay. Yeah, and then I had my second one when I was like 22.
Okay, yeah, so kind of close together.
Yeah, that was kind of when I spiraled a little bit. I went through postpartum depression. I ended up trying to kill myself.
Oh, wow.
And after that, I was going, like, I lost everything. Uh-huh. It was insane. I lost my apartment. I lost my kids. I lost everything.
Your kids to the system?
No, their dad.
Oh, their dad just took them. Yeah. Right. Oh, you're not gonna see her.
They're like, you're so unstable. Like, this is not okay. And so then I started drinking again, and I started drinking a lot.
Wow. And what would I'm just trying to get an idea. What exactly? How much do you consume? What was it you're drinking?
Oh, I was like, because I didn't have my kids. I didn't have shit to do. I didn't have responsibilities. So I was drinking a lot. I was drinking. After work, I would go. I worked in Ocean Beach at a real estate licensing school.
Oh, okay.
And right across the street was Gallagher's. It was Gallagher's at the time. So I get off.
Oh, Obie's a pretty predominant party town.
It definitely is, and it was very convenient. Yeah. So I was doing a lot of drinking there, and like my priorities definitely slipped. And for about 9 months they did, and then I got my shit back together, and I was good.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's like a gap in between like 22 to like 28 and where I was doing like, okay, I didn't think that I had like too much of a problem or anything like that.
Oh, so you weren't drinking at all during those.
I was drinking, but I was drinking more responsibly because then I got my kids back and I was like back with their dad.
Okay, yeah.
Like I was doing good. I was being really healthy. The thing was, is like. Things that I've realized during this time is that I'm a very codependent person.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually something that I discovered after I got sober.
Yeah.
So I ended up in a off and on 4-year abusive relationship from like 28 to 32. Uh-huh. I stayed out of being in a relationship the last 2 years, as long as I've been sober, actually.
Yeah.
And that is ultimately what pushed my decision to be sober. Mm-hmm. It was really hard for me to talk about. I have
it's okay.
Anxiety. So it's, I apologize.
No worries. You're good.
I've never talked about it before. So me and this guy, we had been dating, and you know, I hadn't touched any drugs or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing cocaine, but he was hiding it from me.
Sure.
And then it started being something that he did openly in front of me. And
he got comfortable with you.
Yeah, like, okay. Exactly. And he knew I didn't like it. And like, uh-huh. I didn't, because that was like one thing that I know that I have an issue with myself. It's like, I like the way it feels, especially when you've been drinking, uh-huh. you know, like you have no real concept on like how much you're doing or anything like that at the time.
Yeah.
And so the more we were together, the more it was around.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were drinking every weekend. Mm-hmm. And like, this is when I don't have my kids, mind you. Like, I didn't ever do it when I didn't have my kids. Like, they would be gone and it would just be me and him.
Oh, okay. So you found like little time periods where you can drink and party or whatever.
Yeah. So like, you know. Friday through like Sunday afternoon was like my party time. Like,
yeah.
And we would go out and we would drink Friday, and we'd go out and we'd drink Saturday. Yeah. We would get the Sunday brunch and have some drinks, you know. And I was back in that cycle. And so then I ended up doing cocaine, because if it's around and in your face enough, your willpower just kind of diminishes. And then we were so off and on, and we like had this toxic cycle. And what would happen is I would go out and party because I would be so hurt and so pissed off.
Yeah.
And then I would be coming down, and he would call or he would text me, and I would just get right back with him, and we'd be back in that cycle again. And he was mean, but I was so codependent on it. I let him mistreat me. He was like, you know, withholding communication as punishment if he did something wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at one point during the pandemic, he put his hands on me and broke my clavicle.
Oh, my God.
And so then I'm like in a pandemic and I'm fucking being prescribed Norco. So guess what I was doing after that? You know?
Yeah, slippery slope.
That's a very slippery slope. And you know, doctors just prescribing me 75 Norcos and some muscle relaxers.
Yeah.
And I'm at home not doing shit. And yeah. You know, so then I'm starting to take pills all the time. And uh-huh. At one point I was just like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. Like I didn't like how angry and like I felt crazy. Like they made me feel crazy. And so yeah. Then I started taking edibles instead. Like I guess was the healthier alternative.
Yeah.
It's still a substance.
It's still a substance. Yeah. I know.
I didn't want to be dependent. And so,
because the opiate withdrawals are gnarly.
They are. And you know what? I've never been that cranky in my life until like coming down off of opiates. Like, I felt sick to my stomach.
You can fuck up your day.
I was a rageful, I'm a tiny human. I was raging. I would rip someone's head off coming down. I know you're laughing because you're like, I can't see her doing that, but I
would. Maybe so. Who knows? Maybe after this podcast, I'm going to get my head ripped off.
We don't know what will happen after this. Emotions be heightened.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I went through that for about like 4 years, just like all of these substances and stuff. I guess I never really saw myself as an addict because I felt like I had it under control.
Yeah.
And a lot
of people struggle with that.
Yeah. And I think like that's where it was is like I just learned about, you and I talked about it, high, like functioning alcoholics and functioning addicts. Uh-huh. And I was like on that slope, you know, mm-hmm. where I was kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I would control my habits. I also hid my habits. I'm really nervous because my sister's going to hear this podcast and she had no idea what was going on.
Oh, great. All new information.
So, I'm so sorry to my family. Please don't disown me. But, you know, I've shared this with my adoptive mom. She's okay. You've talked to her. She's a very big supporter of your book.
Yes, I have, yeah.
And she knows. So, but I was on this slippery slope and I was just in this really nasty relationship. And, you know, when you're a codependent human and you don't have enough, like, I guess, help.
Yeah.
You start really settling into those behaviors. Yeah. And that's where I was at is I was just stuck in this endless cycle, like screaming at myself in my car, driving over to this guy's house. And I don't even want to fucking go there because he's going to be so mean to me.
Yeah.
And I know that my feelings are going to be hurt. And I know that later in the week, I'm going to be having panic attacks. And the only thing that's going to help is if I drink.
You're absolutely trapped.
Yeah. And then I'm drinking and then I'm doing cocaine. But then ketamine was introduced to me.
Oh.
And so then I'm drinking, I'm doing cocaine, I'm doing ketamine and cocaine. And I'm just like numbing myself because I didn't want to feel all of the things that I was feeling. And again, doing it just on the weekends and keeping it there. And it was just a really endless cycle. 4 years, 4 years of my life. So that was the rest of my 20s. And then one morning I woke up and I realized how miserable I was. And I was done. And there wasn't any one thing that like triggered it. I think finally at one point I had enough and I ended my relationship. But then I realized that if I end this relationship, I also have to be sober because any opportunity he would have, if I was coming down or if I was drunk or anything like that, it would be taken advantage of. Yeah. And so that was my first step. And
so when you got sober, was it were you feeling like withdrawals or was it rough?
It's hard to distinguish between having withdrawals from narcissistic abuse, trauma, and alcohol because ultimately it's all the same.
Yeah,
you have the same. Your brain works the same.
Yeah.
It releases the same chemicals. Mm-hmm. It gives your body the same response. I was in like a really weird state.
Yeah, where, like I was gonna say, maybe like despair. And
just, yeah, where it was just, I was miserable. I was so unhappy and I was crying all the time and I had panic attacks and and all of these things. And I couldn't even distinguish what it was that did it. And then I was sober for a while and, and then he tried to come back, of course. And and this time I was sober. And I was like, no. But then once he was texting me, it was like the same panic attack.
How long,
like,
were you sober when he was trying to get back at you?
It was like, I want to say about 2 months.
Oh, okay. So it was a little bit of time.
A little bit of time. I thought I was stronger.
Yeah.
But even then, at that time, I had kind of started seeing somebody because of my codependency. So, you know, I jumped right back
in. They really go hand in hand.
But then I'm a codependent in a situationship with another codependent who is also in recovery.
Oh,
he's in recovery.
Oh.
I'm just trying to be sober. He's in recovery. That's like a shit show just leading up.
Well, for some people would say it'd be like a fairy tale romance.
Hey, I heard you're trying to replace like one codependent behavior. Let me hand you this new one here.
Yay. You never know until you try it.
Yeah. I mean, I tried it out, and you know what? I really didn't like it.
Oh, okay. There you go, then. You got your answer.
Yeah. Ultimately, like, what happened was my ex was just trying to come back, and, and I was sober, and I said no. And then it was to the point where I was almost, like, ready to file a restraining order.
Yeah.
And, like, that situationship ended, which was, like, hurtful, too. So I was, like, spiraling at this point. Like, newly sober, situationship ending, boyfriend trying to come back. How do I cope? I've never been sober through all of these feelings before.
Fuck.
What do you do?
It's crazy.
I was like, oh my God.
Fuck, dude.
And I was also sober, but not in recovery. I'm still sober, not in recovery. I should actually let everyone know that too.
Oh, well, you know, people's interpretation of recovery
I guess,
can be different.
Yeah.
I work in treatment, so I totally, I understand. I not everyone's journey is going to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all really recovery really is. And I try to say this to you a few times, but what for me it is the spiritual healing of, you know, that malady that we had, that emptiness that we had inside of us.
Yeah.
Because that's what ultimately is what makes us addicts. It's not the dope. It's not the person. It's us inside.
That we're trying to fill a void that just like seems like it's endless.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of that is trauma and
it is.
Life experiences that you've had and you just don't know how to process it. Like, that's why I'm like a huge advocate for people who struggle with mental health, because I feel like mental health and addiction actually go hand in hand.
Very hand in hand.
Because and it's insane. It's difficult too, because I've experienced like really rough mental health issues, and I get it. And I feel like the healthcare system and, you know, everything that is involved in that just needs to be better in understanding addiction and people who struggle with mental health. A lot of our homeless people who struggle with addiction, their mental health is shit. And it's because like a lot of them are like military, they were veterans and then they got
With PTSD,
you know, PTSD and all these things. And like, how do you cope with PTSD? 'Cause that is really hard.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's just, it's crazy.
Absolutely.
But yeah. So, I've been sober for like 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. 2 years this year.
Fuck yeah.
during that time, I think there's a lot of things that I wish people would have like discussed with you, like the different transitions that you go through during that time, because I feel like at first you're really dependent on other people, right? Because like you are starting to walk through life like fully coherent and fully aware on like your situation and your feelings and all of these things. And that's really hard to do alone.
Yeah.
And so then you start leaning on other people who are around you because you just really need that support. And sometimes that support isn't there, but I was really lucky to have like some really strong friends.
Oh, okay.
I had one friend that came into my life almost right after I was sober, and she was testing out the sober waters, and we used to do all kinds of things together, and I needed her and she needed me during that time, and it was really nice. But then, excuse me.
No, it's okay.
In January of last year, things kind of shifted, and I was forced, I guess, to spend more time alone, and it was like my time to have different experiences by myself.
Okay.
So I didn't know what the fuck to do with myself because I had no hobbies. I just had the fucking gym.
I have no life.
I have no life. My whole personality was going out to the bars, going to shows, and going to the goth club. And like, that's...
Well, those are kind of cool things, though.
They're actually really fun. I still do them. But I do them sober. But like, like, how do you fill your time, like, Saturday or Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Because I can't go to the goth club at noon, you know? And, like, I finish up at the gym within 2 hours. So, like, I have the rest of my day. So I discovered, I don't know if you're familiar, I'm sure you are, the Phoenix app.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Phoenix app. Can you get more into detail about it? Because I've only heard of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So there's this app for sober people to kind of... network together, not even just network, but you know, meet and communicate, and like there's people all over the place that like sign up on this app, and it has like different interests, like things. If you're interested in writing, there's a writing group. If you're interested in kayaking, there's a kayaking group. If you're interested in going climbing, there's a climbing group. And they have sober meetups.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so I downloaded the app because I was like, I need more sober friends. And ultimately, it was super helpful. So in January of last year, I started going rock climbing. I started meeting up with new people.
Oh, yes, I remember you telling me this.
Yeah, and it was actually really incredible. It was really helpful because then I had something to do on Saturdays from like 4 to 8. And
yeah,
it was
right?
just like... really fun, and it gets you out of your head, and then you get to meet other people who are also sober and like build relationships with them.
That's awesome.
I loved it. I definitely feel like people
that's really hard to do too, by the way.
It is. Oh, I'm gonna go meet up with this group of strangers.
Yeah,
if I can make some friends. It took me a couple tries.
A couple times you went to the parking lot, you're like, am I really gonna do this?
Yeah, I had. So I would RSVP and I was like, I don't know if I could do this. And my social anxiety was so high. The first time I ever like actually went, I remember they were like, you're actually really good at this. And I was like, huh, okay, I can do this. And I went for like six, seven months straight. And then I kind of fell off because my job got like more demanding.
Okay.
But I am like super grateful for that because I feel like that is super helpful. I think a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people know that it even exists. Like, hey, if you download this app, just so you know, you can go do this stuff for free.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You want to go rock climbing at Mesa Rim? Stay sober and go climbing with this group of people.
Yeah.
it kept me sober too, because it was like super motivating, because like you have to be sober to do these groups. If you want to go hike on this, like,
oh,
hike on
okay.
hikes, you have to have like 48 hours of consecutive.
Oh, that's space. Not even that bad.
I mean, no, it's not.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, I would encourage, like, I also have a sober gym partner.
Okay.
She's 2 years sober. She's also in the goth scene, and she's a DJ.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. What?
She is.
Is she your friend that I met at the concert?
We do all kinds of stuff together. She's sober. She's actually been like one of the biggest helps because I can vent to her about like different things. Like, this really bothered me. Or if I have like a moment where I'm like, I really want to go out and drink. It's really nice. It's cool.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, she's great. A lot of people I don't think realize that she's sober. A lot of people don't realize that I'm sober. I think maybe.
Well, at the golf club, they probably, that's not the first thing that comes into mind.
Well, and you know what? I just recently pitched an idea on doing a sober goth all ages event, and the requirement is to be sober.
Yeah, like a dry event, you know.
Yeah, so like because I do know that there are kids, there's straight edge kids, there's kids who don't want to do drugs, there's kids that end up doing drugs just because they're pressured into it. And what I really ultimately want to do is like create a space for all ages. So like teenagers, young adults, where they can like still take part in their community events mm-hmm. and like have a good time and it's safe and sober.
Fuck yeah.
So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I had some people who were like totally on board with it and it made me feel really good because I'm like, okay, so like I'm doing something now. Yeah. Like I'm doing something and taking the initiative to like start something for our community mm-hmm. to help eliminate, I guess, that those pressures. And like so many kids are dying now.
I know.
And it's like teenagers. That I just watched a thing where a 12-year-old died of a fentanyl overdose because she just wanted to fit in with her friends and took some pills and she didn't wake up. So it's
that's always like the rough ones for me, man.
Anything
it's like they're literally just experimenting or they're just like, well, my friends are doing it, so it must be safe. And then it's done.
It's never safe. It's not safe right now. I get stressed out a lot of the times because I don't know if you follow anything in the goth community or even with the modeling community, mm-hmm. but we had and we had some people pass away, and it was 3 and 3.
3 and 3.
3 and 3. It wasn't 1 and 10. It wasn't anything. Wow. It was 3 and 3 people OD'd
and died.
2 different times. So it's 2 different groups of people who are all partying together, and all 3 of them didn't wake up the next day.
Oh, my God.
And I feel like people really need to realize the severity in the situation that we're in with this. Like, it's not safe. It's not safe to take pills. It's not safe to do cocaine. It's not safe to do any drugs. Mm-hmm. And I would hate... I told you I had a friend who passed away in December, and she was literally 2 days away from being 30. Mm-hmm. And she had kids. And she she didn't go home to them. And that wasn't anything, it wasn't anything intentional. And, you know, she went out and she partied and she took something that she shouldn't and she didn't wake up. And it's like to the point where like that could be anyone else, any of my absolutely. Other friends, anyone. I would be devastated to hear that news again.
Absolutely.
And it's just like, it's so hard. It makes me so sad. Because I know, like, partying is, like, this weird staple, and it's, like, you know. Because
it's just like that social inclusion, you know, where you feel like you're a part of something when you're partying with somebody, you know.
Well, yeah, and then it's also, like, drinking in general. Drinking is so glorified, too. Absolutely, you're growing up, and you're seeing... Oh, you got a promotion? Let's go get some drinks, you know? Or, oh, you're going through a rough time? Let's go get some drinks.
Yeah, and it's like,
when are we going to start normalizing, hey, you're having a bad day? Let's go for a hike. Let's go get some sunshine. You know? I mean, not everybody likes to hike, but that was the first thing that came to mind.
Some people might get intimidated by that. I can barely walk down the street.
Let's just go sit in the sun for a couple hours, you know, something like... Just like prioritize having fun without the pressure of having to drink.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
I guess it's that the instant gratification, I guess, part of it too. Because it's accessible, it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, me and you could literally just go down the liquor store, like down the street from my spot, like in what, like 30 seconds?
Yeah. And then. All of a sudden, you know, like, well, it'd just be one and done for me. Like, I'd be on the floor or something.
Well, for me, I'm going to drink and then I'm going to go try to score heroin, which doesn't exist anymore.
You know what? No, let's not do that today. That's what I tell people, too. And, you know, and you're somebody who would get it. Like, people are like, do you ever get the urge to drink? And I'm like, well, I know if I drink. Then I'm going to have more drinks and then I'm going to be doing cocaine.
Yeah.
And then after that cocaine, I'm going to be like, you know what? Ketamine sounds pretty good too, because it came so freaking like it became such a part of me and a part of like what that cycle looks like for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that it's not the drinking that bothers me about it. It's everything that comes with it.
It comes with it. All the,
Yeah, and then my behaviors are questionable. You know, the people I'm choosing to spend my time with, what the fuck are you doing, girl?
Those winners over there.
those people in that dark corner, they be looking mighty fine.
The red flags is really pretty.
They do. They actually kind of glow in the dark when you've been drinking. They're like a fiery red, and you know, we always like fire. So for me, it's the patterns and the behaviors and like stuff that I just don't want to do anymore, and that's what keeps me sober. That and like the fact that I could die.
Yeah.
And I have way too much to live for now. Sobriety has absolutely changed my life. I have done like a complete 180. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't even know who I am. I'm like getting overwhelmed. I don't even know. Like, I don't even know who I was, you know, back then, because like, I look at it and it's like really sad. It's genuinely like, I let myself go through those things. And it was like in the name of partying, and like, it wasn't worth that, you know? Yeah. And I spent 4 years of my life being like treated like crap and then treating myself like crap, and I walked away and I was like so miserable, and then sobriety hit me and all of a sudden like everything just started making sense. I had to feel a lot of things that were just really hard and really heavy. Mm-hmm. And it got really lonely. Nobody tells you that at one point. Sobriety gets a little lonely.
Oh well, yeah, you know, eventually you get all these things off your checklist, and then the void kind of starts.
And then you start feeling it, yeah, and that's hard to deal with. And then, but then you start coming back to life, you know, and you find joy in things that you didn't typically find joy in, and that's where I'm at with it. Is I remember a year and a half ago sitting on a beach with this guy that I thought I was like so into, and crying, being like, I just really want to be happy, and I don't think I'm ever gonna have that. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm like, I am so incredibly happy and like lucky to be on this earth, because I get to talk about sobriety with my friends, and I get to share those experiences. I get to encourage people. I have people telling me that I'm inspiring them, and I'm not just inspiring them because of the gym. I'm inspiring them because I'm living my life on the next level of like, can I have that? Like what you have, how did you get that? Mm. And it's like, well, you see, like, I just made this choice. And I know that some people don't have it that easy to just, like, make a decision and, like, that's it. Yeah. Sometimes you need that help and that.
The motivation.
Yeah, and, like, a network of support and, like, people like sponsors and, mm-hmm. and meetings and all of these things. And I think that's, like, one of the things where I have a little bit of a disconnect, because I can't talk to people about sobriety if they are in NA or if it's not that I can't talk to them about it, it's that I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect, because a lot of the times their story is a lot, it's a lot, and like I have a hard time comprehending what's the word I'm looking for, the severity of their addiction.
Because I
didn't experience it. I experienced it on my level. So how you were talking earlier about how everybody's experience is different with an addiction.
Of course.
And there's different levels of addiction too.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
There's some really sick people. I always felt that way too. Cause like, when I, stopped going to meetings and stuff like that, I always kind of felt really insecure, because I got clean and sober when I was 22. And usually people that go to these things are usually middle-aged, typically. the people my age are just always in and out all the time. So I always kind of felt like I didn't really belong, even though I know I have it. You know what I mean? It was kind of a weird feeling for some years. And I'm still like kind of like in this category where it's like I'm a little bit older. I'm in my 30s now, and I'm most likely going to have more time than somebody that's twice my age. Most likely. But, you know, what I look for, though, is not really the mess. I just look at somebody's solution in their recovery. That's all I, because I know at first we all kind of like, I'm trying to find a better word for this, but like dick measure our fucking, you know what I mean? Our disease, you know what I mean? Like, oh, like I did life, or I did shoe terms, or I was in the streets in downtown, you know, smoking crack and.
He's for the streets.
Yeah, for the streets, you know, or you know what I mean? Like there's these like severities, and then, you know, people that went through like extreme circumstances too. And it's like, I was focused on that for a while, but when I started coming back, all I really try to do now is just focus on the similarities and just the solution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I, you know, I, whenever I talk, I do get into my story only just so, not for me to forget where I come from.
You I know love what that. I mean? Yeah, and 22, that's a really, that's crazy. Yeah, that's impressive. Because 22, I can tell you what I was doing at 22. I just did.
I mean, I didn't want it, though. I mean, it was great. Like, I was in where was I? Oh, yeah, I was in George Bailey, and I didn't want my date at all, dude. I fucking was so bitter. I wanted to go to the bars. I hadn't even drank at a bar.
Oh my god!
Yeah, dude, and I just couldn't stop fucking shooting up, and and the only reason why I even know my date is because of my court papers. That's how I saw the day I was arrested,
yeah.
And I was like, oh fuck, man, like I just can't wait to fucking get the fuck out of here and do my thing, and but the thing was is like because I had all these consequences. Like prison term lingering over my head and the fact that I didn't have anywhere to go. My family didn't want to, you know, deal with me anymore. They knew exactly what I was. And then I got sent to a treatment center up in fucking Campo in the middle of nowhere.
Oh my God.
Not the coolest spot for a 22-year-old man. And I'm surrounded by a bunch of other cool guys like myself. And like I just kind of calmed down a little bit, but more silly. I just finally wanted something different.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't an overnight process. It wasn't like I woke up one day and I'm like, I'm going to stay clean and sober for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that at all for me. It took fucking months and months of fucking thresholds and all this mind fucking of myself. Yeah. And then. That's why I finally just was like, I'm gonna throw the towel. I'm gonna do something different.
I think that's what it is that we just get so tired of being so miserable and repeating the same things. And that's what a lot of people have in common.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you just want change, and sometimes we don't know where to start with our change.
Yeah. And it's scary.
It is terrifying. Change is the most terrifying thing out there.
Yeah.
And being strong.
Yeah, and also, you know, because you kind of touched on it earlier, is like, you know, so my family wants me to stop shooting up heroin, but they didn't really give a shit if I drank.
Yeah.
You know, so when I, you know, I got out of rehab, fuck, I was still on paper, too. I was still on probation. They were like, oh, you want a beer? Like, all the time for, like, my first year or two.
Yeah, I don't think my family took my sobriety seriously.
That's absolutely was my case.
Yeah, and it's really weird because like I would go over and they'd be like, "You want some wine?" No, I'm sober. Okay. And then, yeah. Are you sure you don't want anything? Yep, I'm absolutely sure. And like it's because it's so normal and it's so okay. And like it's just like, well, they also didn't know what I was struggling with because I wasn't honest with people.
Sure.
That's like the worst part about what I did and what I was dealing with during that time was that I hid everything because I was ashamed and I was extremely embarrassed and so disappointed in who I was. And now it's great because I get to tell people the truth, you know, and that's just like this weight is like lifted off my shoulders, and I'm not ashamed of it because I'm actually really impressed that I got through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved past it, and now we're here. But yeah, it's wild because people are like, "Are you sure you don't want to drink?"
What?
It's just a drink.
Yeah, It's so good. Like, literally, dude, like, fuck, what was this? Like, maybe, dude, it was like 2 years ago. My best friend had died from a drug overdose. Mm. And then, but when all this was happening, somehow my uncle was telling me, he's like, yeah, your grandma doesn't know why you're sober. She asks all the time, like, why does he not drink? And I'm like, damn, like, well, you just got a good example right there from Phil fucking dying from a heroin or fentanyl overdose. And yeah.
You're like, I can drink, but you see what's going to happen after.
Yeah. That's the part they show. That's the part that they just said. Yeah. What? Like, well, it's just a beer.
And that's why people think it's just this, it's just that. And it's like, no, no, no. That's not how I work, though. I know you might work that way, and that's really great, but. You know, I don't have the capability of being like, oh, it's just a beer. Because yeah. I'm always going to be like, I'm going to have three more beers. And like you. Yeah. You're going to be finding somebody who has drugs, you know?
Where's it at?
It goes hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely does.
But I don't know. I like you said, like we just wake up and we've had enough and then we have to heal. And I think the healing portion of things gets really difficult because when you've been self-medicating your entire life, healing is just wild because you start feeling things that you thought you got over, right? But you didn't really get over
it. And they resurface sometimes.
I remember crying in my car a couple months ago. I had a boyfriend when I was in high school, when I was 17. His name is Jesse, and he flew through a windshield during a drunk driving incident.
Oh, shit.
And he didn't make it. And I was listening to freaking Mac Miller. And I'm just, like, crying my eyes out. And I'm like, oh, my God, Jesse, I love this song.
Oh, I can't believe
he's gone. And then I started thinking about all of it. Because we would just get fucked up together. Yeah. We would do, like... we'd take ecstasy and we'd get drunk. And I was like, I remember the last time I had talked to him and he's like, I love you. Please don't break up with me. And I didn't even have a reason to break up with him at the time. And then the next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call that he flew through a windshield. And I guess I didn't process it like I thought I did. Because then I'm crying about it at 34. Oh, God. And I felt like the craziest person ever. And I'm like, well, sobriety just be like that. It be like that, okay? It comes for you on days that you don't anticipate it coming for you.
Yeah, and just like that.
Just like that. You'll wake up one day and be like, why am I so sad? And then you'll remember a time that you fell down the stairs and you were 5.
You know? It was so painful. I was embarrassed.
Dear God, I can't go to work today. I'm just so embarrassed with myself. But yeah, the healing process is wild because you go through so many different things. But then the other side of it is just so pretty, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I bet your quality of life is just so much better now.
Way, way fucking better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Can't even compare it.
Yeah, every time I see you, you're smiling and you laugh. And you know, that's really cool. And you're so motivated. And I love that. I love that energy. And I love being around people like that, too. Like, I'm sitting here being like, people tell me I'm inspiring. You're inspiring. Like, that's rad. You're like, you started your clothing company to bring... awareness to fentanyl, which is absolutely incredible, and I feel like it's really cool to watch you grow in that too.
Thank you.
And now you're starting this podcast and people get to share their story and you get to connect with other people who have gone through similar experiences.
Yeah.
And that's incredible too, because people need to hear that and they need to know that.
I think so too.
Yeah. And like, I love that. I think that is just, I'm in awe of that because you're like taking the initiative to do things.
Well, you know, look, like both things. And was I mind fucked the shit out of myself for a while. You know, even like the podcasting was brought up like a year ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't fucking do that. I don't have a good personality. I think my voice sounds weird. I laugh a lot.
And then I'm like, hey, bro, you have a good podcast voice.
Thank you. But, you know, so I just, I don't know. You know, I was like just kind of, you know, I had mixed feelings about it. And then I talked to my buddy. I was out in Vista, you know, my buddy Rafa. He's just like, come on, man, just do the podcast. And, you know, and because he has a really successful one. And I was like, you know what, like, fuck it, man. And I'm so like lucky, you know, to have like these amazing people, man, in my life, even prior, you know, prior to everything. And I know, what motivated me is I just wanted these voices to be a little louder and just to be known, man. Yeah. Put a face behind you guys who model for me, especially. Because that's a better way, I think, than, you know, captioning something on Instagram or...
Oh, yeah. We're not out here modeling just because it's something cool.
Yeah, like, absolutely. We
have, like, every single person that I've met through Fuck Fentanyl, they all have a very different, unique story.
Right.
And I do feel as if... And I want to know everyone, too. I want to know every single one. And I want to be like, damn, you are a savage. You freaking overcame that. Or yeah. You're still working through it. Like,
absolutely.
Even people with, like, a little bit of clean time, like, that's incredible because are doing it every single day. You are getting up and you are making it through the day. And that says a lot because that means your willpower is there and like you feel confident enough to get through the day without any substances.
Oh fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, and that's hard.
That early fucking part, man, is so fucking difficult.
It is. I went through a one very specific time where I almost like slipped up, and that was last February, and I think I had like. It's so hard to keep track of clean time. I think I had like 7 or 8 months at that time.
Okay.
And so I was like in it, mm-hmm. and I was doing really good. And then I was having a panic attack because I was in a space that just felt unsafe. And I was out at a bar in a club, and somebody was invading my space and made me feel unsafe. And uh-huh. I got so uncomfortable. And like, I have CPTSD. I should like, just from going through sure. like the things that I went through. And so, it'll make a little bit more sense.
Okay.
So then I'm like in a hot room and I'm freezing, but I'm sweating and I'm having this crazy, weird, like reaction to the situation around me. And, you know, my abuser's in my bubble, and mm-hmm. I'm like, I hadn't had to experience that for a while, mm-hmm. and I'm in a bar.
Oh, ooh, dangerous.
And I'm supposed to be celebrating my friend's birthday.
Okay.
And I walk up to the bar, and I could legitimately taste agent and soda. I was like, I could taste it.
Oh, shit.
And I knew that I had my car in a parking lot, and I just left. But I was that close. I walked up to the bar and I was like, you know what? I could do it and I'll be fine. Uh-huh. And I left because I knew that I wasn't going to be fine because it wasn't just going to be that one gin and soda.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, I will never forget that because I had like, even sometimes when I see other people doing like cocaine,
yeah,
I try to stay away from it now and like stay away from people who are doing it. I can feel it. And I can taste it. And it's like, and that's when you know, too, like, oh, I have a problem.
The cocaine actually has, like, that weird back taste that you kind of feel it way back, like, in the back of your throat.
And you can smell it, too.
Yeah.
Like, strong cocaine.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
You can smell it.
And you will never forget that smell.
No, you will never, ever forget that smell. And so sometimes I can, even if it's on TV, I'll be like, oh, I know what that feels like. And it makes me feel so gross.
You know, that happened, when I was watching, it was one of my favorite movies, Trainspotting. Mm. It was like one of the scenes where it got the close up, you know, where he's like shooting up, and I was just like, oh my fucking God.
Because you can feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's like freaking, what is it? Muscle memory.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly. Like muscle. It's muscle memory, bro. I feel half high right now.
I actually feel high watching that.
Just watching this guy.
Yeah, it's wild. So, like, I don't know. I have huge respect for people who make it through those moments because those moments are hard.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard, especially when it's in front of you, in your face. Temptation is there, and you're like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. It's wild to see people do that, too, and to have, like, such strong, I guess, a sense of, okay, this is going to ruin me if I do this.
Mm.
So, like, I have friends, like, who still party and stuff, and, yeah, I just try to stay out of it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, establish boundaries and...
Yeah, it's just to the point where it's like, okay, I understand that I'm a certain way now. And before I was like, I'm not an addict.
Yeah,
no.
You only debate it like 100 times in your head. But
yeah, I actually say it all the time. I am not an addict. And then I'm like, now I say... I'm what you call a functioning addict. I have my shit together enough to where it hasn't created an issue yet.
Yeah.
But it creates an issue in my personal life, but everywhere else I'm good. So now I'll openly admit it. And I've had people tell me too, oh, it's really crazy that you haven't had an issue with like substance abuse. And I'm like, well, define substance abuse, because if I'm using it to self-medicate,
yeah,
then there's an issue.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. There you go. You literally just hit the nail on the head right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny to me. It's just like, I'm not an addict. Actually, you know what? I've been lying to myself this whole time because I don't want to admit it, but it's cool. There was like something else that I was going to cover and my brain just like totally slipped.
No worries.
Yeah.
You know, I could definitely, I definitely would love to have you on again.
Yeah.
Like, cause I'm dead serious. I want to hear like different point of views and different perceptions, and you know what I mean? I wanted, you know, when I started Fuck Fentanyl, I wanted it to be all inclusive, really. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be an addict. You don't have to, you know, really, man, like, it all comes down to is like, we all lost somebody that we loved, man.
Yeah.
To fucking this fucking drug.
Yeah.
Or even just the disease of addiction or
my poor alcoholism. Little sister. I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, she lost one of her best friends to fentanyl, and he was 17. 17.
Jesus.
Yeah, so this is like a huge thing. And I mean, like I said, I feel so strongly about this, and I like it's really impressive that you started it. It really is. I feel like there's a lot of different things that I look at with fuck fentanyl and like the awareness that it brings, because I know people used to just say fuck fentanyl and there was nothing being done about it. Like, what are you doing to bring awareness? And like, yeah. I have a friend who feels so strongly about it. Her name is Kelly. And uh-huh. She's really excited for this podcast too, by the way.
Oh, fuck yeah. And, shout out to Kelly.
She's one of my sober supporters.
Cool.
She, after like the most recent overdose with some of the goth musicians in the scene, the three and three, she went out and she bought some Narcan, mm-hmm. and she bought some test strips.
Oh, wow.
And she went out to a goth event and she just handed them on out.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And she was That's like, awesome. Do you know how to use them? Do you know how to distribute Narcan? Yeah. Do you like, is it just genuinely wanted to provide information to help mm-hmm. keep people safe? And I think that's incredible. And I know that's something that you do too.
Yeah, I do that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that I want to do. I would love to know like where like there's distributions at. So like it's, cause I don't know if you've ever gone to the store to try to buy Narcan. I'm sure you have.
Yeah. It's one of those things where Narcan is kind of just distributed by like small little groups. There's really no like big, all like, you know, like everyone gets our stuff from there. It's kind of scattered, and you know, they do look like some organizations do really good at distributing them, but honestly though, ultimately, like I feel like more can be done.
Yeah, if you go to CVS and try to buy it, by the way, it's $50.
$50? Are you kidding me?
It's
wow.
A little disgusting.
That's kind of crazy.
It's wild to me. I was really disgusted.
I got like literally like 5 boxes right now. Man.
Yeah.
Weird. You like, can have as many as you want.
I'm at a point where I'm just like, it's not even just that the information needs to be provided to people to keep them safe.
Yeah.
It's also like, I hope people realize that Narcan isn't 100% effective.
Oh, no. Yeah. That is very important.
Yeah. So I think for me with fentanyl, people just really, really need to be safe in what they're doing and, you know, the drugs that they're taking and everything in between. But it's so unsafe. I wish it was easy as being like, hey, guys, there's fentanyl in these drugs. Please don't take them because you will die. Yeah. And people would listen. But instead, people think that they're immune and invincible.
Yeah.
And they continue doing it. And then one day they just don't wake up. And it's like...
My friend Spike, when I did the when he interviewed me for his article in the Reader, you know, he brought that up, like, you know, like somebody tests for their drugs, they know it has fentanyl. Chances are they're still gonna do it.
Yeah.
Chances are they're still gonna do it because they're just gonna be like, well, it's probably just a little bit. And I can,
it doesn't take much. That's what people need to realize.
Yeah.
You're doing a key bump, and you're gonna die.
Oh yeah.
You do, I don't know. It's just, if there's fentanyl in your drugs, throw them away. Throw them away. Yeah. That's it. Just don't do them. I feel like that's the only solution that we should have at this point is that it's not safe. You shouldn't be doing it. And you just let the drugs go. If you want to drink, go fucking drink. That's fine. I don't care. I mean, if you're not a sober person and that's how you do things, then do whatever. I still think alcohol is absolutely terrible for you. It's linked to like Alzheimer's and so many other different diseases. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I'd rather somebody go drink than die from one little bump.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely true.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you know, it's like everyone has their own road. Everyone's going to, you know, ultimately make that choice, you know, am I going to pick up? And, you know, my whole thing is just, you know, just be aware of what you're doing, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just know it's your life you're fucking with.
Yeah, exactly. And it's cool because people like you are trying to put it out there that you're fucking, you know, like it's just, it is what it is. I say it is what it is, but it's really devastating is what it is.
No, yeah. And that's why, you know, for me, it's like, that's why I like to reach out to people, man. And, you know, make you think, hey, look, man, you don't need to do that, man. Like there's other stuff. And that's why I wanted you on here just from you to tell your personal experiences of how you stayed sober. And there's other options. You don't have to go to fucking AA every fucking day.
No.
You don't have to, you know, read these literature books like the Bible, you know. You don't have to be a born again, like militant Christian, you know.
No, you don't.
There's so many other options, man.
Yeah. I yesterday I went on, dude, I feel so premature talking about this guy. but I actually went on this really cool, the guy's sober. He's 4 years sober, which is incredible.
Okay.
And we were planning our weekend and I was like, let's go to Mount Laguna. Let's go in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
You can do different things and have so much fun with other people like sober. Like, let's go freaking hike in the snow. Let's like, you know, you don't have to go to the bar either. You don't have to party. You don't have to do all of these things to have fun. And I think circling back to the Phoenix app, that's why that was creative.
Yeah.
It was to show people that you could still have a good time without substances, with other people. And I do know that they have those groups too, where it's like young adults and they throw like a DJ dance party things.
Oh, okay.
I've only heard about them like twice. They have like an emo night and they have like another kind of night. Yeah, it's wild. It's really cool. I forget what it's called. Or otherwise, I'd be like, hey, you can go to this night.
Check that one. well, that's fucking cool though. I like that. Man, that's fucking awesome.
It's cool because then like people get to understand that you can have a good time without doing these things.
Right.
And sobriety is actually really cool.
You know? It is.
It is. Yeah. I think we're kind of the coolest people out there.
Like 100% fact, actually.
And that is my very humble opinion. Very humble.
Dude, I'm going to say it straight up. There was nothing cool about me when I was like in my early 20s, strung out, always going to jail, hanging out with knuckleheads that didn't care.
No, there was
nothing cool about it.
There's nothing cool. There's nothing attractive. There's nothing fun. Like, that just sounds like a miserable time.
And it was.
Straight up. And there was nothing cool about me getting blacked out drunk and, like, falling over on the sidewalk.
It could be a little sad.
I mean, I'm sure it was really entertaining for other people, but for me the next day. There were times where I woke up with these, like, nasty scrapes on my knees, and I'd be, because I had to climb up my stairs because I couldn't walk up them.
Yeah. There's nothing cool about that. Like rock climbing.
Like a zombie.
Yeah,
like,
See, that's how you got so good, because you practiced.
You're not wrong.
Well, thank you again for coming on, Steffi. I absolutely love talking to you. I can do this all fucking day. You're an absolute inspiration. Like, I, you know what I mean? I respect your route, your journey. You know what I mean? Whether it's just meeting people to just do fun things, or, you know, obviously you work out and you go to the gym a lot, and it's amazing to, you know, see you conquering your demons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I you know, that's one thing I could definitely relate to you about. And I appreciate everything you've done, and just keep on killing it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I've had fun. This was a good time.
All right, everyone. Hope you had a good one.